I'm Angeline Hartman. I've spent my career as a journalist covering some of the most heinous and bizarre crimes in history. As a correspondent and producer on the iconic television show America's Most Wanted, I worked for John Walsh, helping cops all over the country catch bad guys on the run. Now I work at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, helping families seek answers. My craft is storytelling. My passion is crime fighting. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Season 5 of Inside Crime. The story I'm bringing you this season is very personal to me. Timothy Pitson was just 6 years old when he disappeared from Aurora, Illinois. It's a mystery that has fascinated people all over the country. And it turns out, it's the first case I ever worked on at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Over the years, I've grown close to his family. It's hard to believe we still don't have answers after all this time. Timothy disappeared 10 years ago today. Let's start at the beginning.
Her and Tim had a really good, tight relationship. They did a lot of things together, went a lot of different places together. Timothy was like Amy's rock, and he was growing up, and they great together.
That's Jim Pitson, Timothy's dad. Jim and Amy married in 2004 and had Timothy later that year. He's their only child, and Jim says the three of them were very close. Everyone who knew Amy says she was a great mom.
They did a lot of stuff together. They went to a lot of water parks, went up to her mom's house a lot, just the two of them for overnight or just a visit. Tim and her were pretty much inseparable at times.
Kara Jacobs is Amy's sister. She says the mother and son had a special bond.
She was an amazing mother. She had so much patience. I mean, Timothy was like, you take my two girls and multiply it by three. He had so much energy. He was going all the time. He was into stuff. He was so busy. He was always talking. He was always laughing. He was just, you know, always so much happening. And that was something that was difficult for Jim sometimes to deal with that high of an energy level from your child, but it never fazed her. Just, she was always perfectly fine. He could literally be hanging off her like a monkey, and she just was not the slightest crack, just always happy and patient. And they had this relationship where they just seemed to get each other.
6-year-old Timothy was in kindergarten at Greenman Elementary School in Aurora. May 11th, 2011 was a Wednesday. Jim told me that he dropped off Tim that morning at around 7:45. School started at 8 a.m.
Was that your routine? You took him to school every day?
No, Amy had a bout of vertigo. She had inner ear type thing, like almost like Meniere's disease the day before, and she was wobbling, and I'm like, I'll just take Tim. I'll take Tim to school and take you to work, and then I'll just go to work. I've already called in and told him I'm going to be a half hour, 45 minutes late. My boss's like, not a problem. Take care of the family. You got to take care of the family first, and we'll be here when you get here. So we hop in the Jeep. I drop Tim off at school. And he hops out the back, wearing his little rubber boots, and waddles off to school. Goes, love you. I go, love you. And he goes, love you, Dad. And I go, I'll pick you up later. And he's like, okay. And he just runs off to kindergarten. Then I drop Amy off at work, and she walks in. And I go, love you. And she goes, oh, I love you too. And then goes in, and then I go to work. And then
Amy was working full time at a property management company nearby. Jim said Amy normally dropped off Timothy on her way to work, and then it was Jim who usually picked him up and then took him to daycare for the rest of the day. Timothy's kindergarten class ended at 10:30.
So like 10:25, I hop and leave and drive the 4 blocks or 5 blocks to the school. And his teacher goes, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm coming to get Tim. Oh, he left at 8:15 this morning.
He left at 8:15? How could that make any sense? Jim was confused and annoyed. What was happening? Who picked up Timothy? And why? Jim immediately went to the front office to find out.
And so I walk in and see who checked him out, and it was Amy's signature. Then I called her a bunch of times, seeing where she's at, what's going on. And then I go to work, and I told the secretary, I'll be gone the rest of the day. Got some family issue I have to take care of. And I really didn't say anything to my boss about what's going on, because I had no idea at the time.
Amy apparently told the front office that there was a family emergency, and that's why she was picking up Timothy unexpectedly. Jim says he called Amy over and over on her cell phone. He got no answer. He reached out to family and friends. Amy's sister, Kara, said she hadn't heard from Amy since that Monday.
So it was Wednesday. I was going to culinary school at the time. I remember I was in between classes, and Jim called. And I thought, this is weird. You know, he doesn't call me. We don't really talk very much. I was in Washington State. They were in Illinois. So it's just, I thought it was strange. So picked up the phone and he said, Amy took Tim and I don't know where she is. Have you heard from her? Do you know anything? Did she tell you anything? And I said, no.
Hi, everyone. Did you know that Inside Crime is an independently produced podcast? You can help support our work through Patreon. Be sure to check out my website, insidecrime.org, to find out how you can get more involved behind the scenes. Venture inside with me, insidecrime.org.
Have you heard from her? Do you know anything? Did she tell you anything? And I said, no.
Jim kept trying to reach Amy, but he never heard back from her. And that night, they didn't come home. The next morning, he called Aurora police. It was official. Amy Pitson and Timothy Pitson were reported missing. Jim was worried sick. As you can imagine, so many thoughts were racing through his mind as he tried to make sense of it. He told me that he and Amy had been going through a rough patch in their marriage, and he thought maybe she suddenly decided she needed space. Amy's family was hoping that was it too, that Amy left with Timothy to just get away and would be back soon.
But going into Thursday, heard nothing. A lot of calls back and forth between all of us. After a day, I thought, this is not good, you know. Certainly did not think along the lines of what was about to happen, but I started to think, okay, we're past a day and she's had time to calm down, and this is not good that she hasn't called any of us. And then Friday afternoon comes along and she called my mom about 1:30 in the afternoon. Told my mom I'm fine, everything's okay. She didn't say anything. She just told my mom, I'm fine, you know, I'll talk to you. I think she said, I'll talk to you tomorrow, or I'll talk to you soon. Yep, she said, Timothy's fine, just needed a little time, and, you know, everything's okay. And my mom called me, obviously, right after that, and said, I heard from Amy. She said she's okay. And, you know, I said, well, where is she? What's going on? She said, I have no idea, but she sounded okay. And I thought, oh, thank goodness.
That was Friday, May 13th. Amy knew that family, friends, and police had been trying to reach her. First, she called her mom, and then she called Jim's brother, Chuck. Media reports have said that Timothy could be heard in the background of these calls, and he seemed to be fine. They could hear him saying he was hungry or something like that. Now, when I called Jim's brother, I learned something very different than those media reports.
Chuck told me that he spoke directly to Timothy.
I had her phone number in my phone along underneath, underneath my brother's number. So it came up Jim. So I answered. I'm like, "What's up, dude?" And it was Amy. And I go, "Amy, what is going on? What's, you know?" And she's like, "Oh, I just needed a break. You know, everything's fine." And then I'll never forget this, because I said, "You know, why don't you just come to Waterloo?" She goes, "What? Don't you trust me? I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not going to hurt Tim." And at the time, I believed her. You know, because why would you say something like that? And I've never seen her mean to Tim. I've never seen her mean to my daughter. You know, I don't think she had a mean bone in her body.
Did you speak to Timothy on that Friday when Amy finally called you?
Yeah, when Amy called me on Friday, I talked to her for a little bit. And she goes, "Do you want to talk to Tim?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he gets on the phone just super happy. "Hi, Uncle Chuck. I'm on vacation. We went here, we went there." I'm like, "Well, that's good, buddy. You know, hope you're having a good time." And, you know, it was all, he was just super happy. And if I would have known then what I know now, I would have kept her on the phone as long as I could and drove to Sterling Rock Falls. Because I told her, I said, "You know, if there's a problem, come to Waterloo." I said, "I don't know what's going on between the two of you, but if there's a problem, come to Waterloo. I'll make sure everything's fine. Don't worry, everything's fine. I'm going to go home. You know, I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not going to hurt Tim."
Chuck says Amy didn't say much more than that. Family and friends were relieved to know that Amy and Timothy were okay. The next day was Saturday, May 14th. Kara says she was away from her cell phone and realized she had missed several calls from her mom. And then her phone was ringing again.
And I pick up the phone, and it's not her, it's her neighbor. And now I'm terrified. Now I'm thinking something's wrong with my mom. And she said, "Your mom's been trying to call you. She wanted me to keep calling you. She needs to talk to you. So can you please hold on while I go get her?" And my mom comes on the phone and says, "Amy's dead." And I, like anybody who's experienced that news, you don't understand. You know, she's young. I don't understand. Was she in an accident? What happened? She tells me that she committed suicide. There, she's in a motel, and Tim's not with her. And just confusion and fog. How could he not be with her? He was with her. Did Jim pick him up? Where is he? I don't understand. And she said that the police found a note, but she didn't know what was going on yet. All she knew is that Tim wasn't there. And her doorbell was ringing and the police were there to talk to her.
Police confirmed Amy committed suicide in a Rockford, Illinois motel room. It appeared that Amy checked into that motel the night before, alone.
She goes into the room and writes out three suicide notes. One of them is mailed to my mom. One is mailed to her friend Liz. And one is left on the bed with pictures of Timothy. She apologized in that letter that was left for the mess that she made. She has her snack, takes her Benadryl. She gets into a warm bath and cuts her wrists. I think that it wasn't happening fast enough for her at this point, so she gets up out of the bath, takes the razor again, and cuts her own throat. And that's where she was found the next morning. I often think more than anything about the poor person who had to walk in on that. And I'm so sorry that's an image that they have to have in their mind for the rest of their life. I've heard from some of the detectives that the scene was horrific, and it was up there with a murder scene. Very violent and very disturbing. And I know that she would feel bad that she did that to somebody, but she did it anyway. And I hope that that person that has to live with that scene in their mind can forgive her for making them go through that.
It was a motel employee who discovered that horrific scene, and there was no sign of Timothy. Where could he be? Amy's note was sad and chilling. It raised more questions. She said that Timothy was safe, and he was with people who would care for him. The search for Timothy shifted into high gear. Was he okay? As investigators worked to find him, Amy's other notes would arrive in the mail days later. Coming up on the next episode of Inside Crime.
And so that's kind of where this mystery really takes off, because, you know, what does that mean? And that's been the dying question in this case is, you know, what does the care of unnamed people mean? You know, does that mean he's with somebody? Does that mean he's deceased and he's with these people in heaven? You know, it's always been those theories about this case is what did those letters mean? And what does that mean? Where is Timothy?
That's next week on Inside Crime. Please be sure to check out my website, insidecrime.org, to see a brand new image of what Timothy might look like now at age 16. The image was created by forensic artists at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and just released today. I'm your host, Angeline Hartman. Don't forget to subscribe to Inside Crime on Apple or your favorite listening app. Thanks, everyone.